in Ireland, I just think, like where I'm from, especially, I suppose, like you've Gaelic football, you've hurling, just say for a boy, right? And then they might play basketball, soccer, rugby or something like that. But it's always GAA that would come first for a lot of the kids. Now, obviously, there's a lot of kids that put rugby or soccer or whatever first as well. But for a lot of the kids, because it's the biggest, it's what our national game, I suppose, they'd always put GAA first. Whereas here, I can see, like, first of all, personally, I'd always encourage kids to play as many games as they can or many different sports as they can. So, like, here, I suppose, it was kind of a shock to the system for us, really, when we moved over, even myself and Key and the other lad. You know, we're so used to GAA being first and, you know, not interfering with that. And then you come over here and the kids have like 10 other different sports that they're going to, like I see there. And I can see why. I mean, like, big thing here is scholarships for college and all that. And, you know, the high school sports are huge and all that. So a lot of the time, you know, they're out in the evenings with different sports. So you're trying to, I suppose, keep the GAA to set times.
That was Eamon Fitzgerald, who's the head of games for New York GAA. Hello, and welcome to episode 86 of the Irish Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Becker. Eamon will be my guest on the show today. We're going to cover a number of topics related to how to promote Irish sports here in the United States, especially with competition from more traditional American sports like baseball. Let's welcome Eamon to the Irish Baseball Podcast. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Glad to be on.
So first of all, that's a heck of a title there, the head of games. So what is involved in that job?
So I suppose just background about me, I suppose. Obviously, I'm Irish from County Kerry. So I worked with the Gaelic Athletic Association, the GAA, for the last for 15 years back in Ireland. So I was based in a university and I was basically organizing all the Gaelic games for the students in the university in Kerry. So the role came up, the head of games role came up here in New York then, and I thought, you know, why not apply for it? So I moved over here in August of 2022, started as a development officer for hurling in Camogie, and then in January then moved into that role. So basically, the role is basically, I suppose, just a little background, there's 2,500 boys and 500 girls roughly playing underage GAA here in New York. So 3,000 kids, I suppose you need a bit of structure and you need someone to kind of lead that, I suppose. So I suppose my job is promoting, first of all, Gaelic football, ladies football, hurling and camogie, which are the four main field sports, I suppose, for GAA, to the kids here in New York, and also helping out with adult teams and coaching and all that. So promoting it, coaching it, organizing different events for the GAA here. And basically kind of like, you know, from just getting out, meeting the clubs, meeting the people, and I suppose seeing what sport they need as well, I suppose. So we have another full-time staff member, Keane O'Dea. He's development officer for football and Gaelic football and ladies football. So I suppose the two of us kind of work together a lot and just get to as many clubs as we can and just promote it to the kids and help coach the kids and all that.
Now, I haven't been active in about the last year, but I was a member of the Tampa Bay GAA for a number of years down here in Florida. And I feel like it's such a different experience. So when you're somewhere like New York, where you have thousands of kids learning the Irish games, we would be surprised to know the amount of people who are moving back and forth on a regular basis. Down here, we were much more focused on, you know, introducing new people to the games, teaching the games to people, and winning kind of took a back seat and competition took a back seat. But I imagine in New York, while yes, you're teaching the games to the kids, by the time they get to the adult ages, it's all about winning, right?
You know what? I think maybe it's just New York in general. There's a very competitive nature here as well, I suppose. You know, I mean, yes, 100% participation, you know, it would be where we're coming from. You know, that'd be like we're trying to get it out there to as many people as possible, no matter what background they have. And I suppose, you know, get as many people playing it as possible. But then I suppose you have coaches and players and all that I suppose are by nature and competitive, I suppose. So, I mean, when they, like, our spring season starts next week for underage. So, like, we've got games from U8 right up to U20. And then the adult season is starting as well in the next few weeks. So, like, all them teams, yeah, they'll play loads of games and all that. But when they get on the field, they can be pretty competitive no matter what age it is. Like, in Ireland, there's a goal game system. So it's basically U8, U10, and U12 is basically non-competitive. It's more about everyone getting the equal game time and everyone getting to play in different positions on the pitch and all that, which is brilliant. That probably hasn't come in here as much yet. So, like, this year now with U8, we're hoping that, okay, that's the format we'll take with that, that it's non-competitive and everyone just goes out and everyone gets game time. And the idea behind it is you want to keep kids playing the game. You know, I mean, if you've got kids turning up every week and they're not getting much game time, sure, they're going to find another sport where they are getting game time, and, you know, they'll fall out of love with GA, we'll say, and they'll move on to another sport. So we want to get as many kids playing it and keep them playing it up to adults, I suppose. That's the big thing in New York, I suppose, as well. I mean, there's a huge emphasis put on the underage system because I guess they want to be self-sustainable, I suppose, down the line, that it's all, they're not depending on the Irish person coming over anymore to fill their New York teams or to fill the clubs over here, basically, that, okay, they have their underage system. There's a pathway now for these kids to go on and play with their clubs, first of all, from juvenile into youth into adult, and then into the New York system as well, where they're moving into development squads at U13, U14 level, going on to play with FELA teams for New York, where they go back to Ireland in the summer and compete. And then they move on to 17, 18s, play with Ireland, or play with New York teams in competitions in Ireland, and then move on up to the senior ranks as well. Like this year now, we've had New York senior hurling team compete in a competition at home. We've had a New York senior football team only compete last Sunday against Mayo. We've had our colleges team. So basically any player that's registered in New York GA, that's in a university, they all come together and form a team. And they went back to Ireland in February and won the Cornan McLean Cup, which is, like, I suppose, Division 3, but, like, it's still a massive achievement. That was their second time in 2 years, when it, so second time in a row. So there is a pathway there for them. And so far, they've been pretty successful, you know, in what they've done back in Ireland, or, you know, wherever they've competed, really. So
one of the things we find a lot in youth baseball is that kids are sort of pushed by coaches to specialize at a pretty early age. So whereas when I was a kid, I played, you know, all three of the major U.S. sports. I would have loved to have been introduced to the GAA sports when I was a kid, but I was growing up in central Pennsylvania. They still don't have a club where I was raised. But do you find that kids are kind of forced to specialize on the GAA sports, or can they still compete in basketball, football, baseball, American football, baseball? Can they still compete in these other sports while learning the Gaelic games?
Yeah, definitely. Like, in Ireland, I just think, like, where I'm from, especially, I suppose, like, you've Gaelic football, you've hurling, just say for a boy, right? And then they might play basketball, soccer, rugby, or something like that. But it's always GA and Ireland that would come first for a lot of the kids. Now, obviously, there's a lot of kids that put rugby or soccer or whatever first as well. But for a lot of the kids, because it's the biggest, it's what our national game, I suppose, they'd always put GA first. Whereas here I can see, like, first of all, personally, I'd always encourage kids to play as many games as they can or many different sports as they can. So, like, here, I suppose it was kind of a shock to the system for us, really, when we moved over, even myself and Key and the other lad. You know, we're so used to GA being first and, you know, not interfering with that. And then you come over here and the kids have, like, 10 other different sports that they're going to, like, I see there. And I can see why. I mean, like, big thing here is scholarships for college and all that. And, you know, the high school sports are huge and all that. So a lot of the time, you know, they're out in the evenings with different sports. So you're trying to, I suppose, keep the GA to set time. So, like, for example, Gaelic football, ladies football is every Saturday now for the next 8 weeks, we'll say 9 weeks that way. And at least, you know, they know that this is their time, and you know, none of the other sports really will kind of, you know, conflict with it. Like, we try to get hurling on a Sunday, but like straight away I have coaches come back to me telling me, oh, we've our soccer scheduled for Sunday, so you're trying to find a time on a Sunday then that won't interfere with soccer as well. So there's a bit of playing around with schedules, and there's a bit of playing around with different games and all that. But no, kids should play as many sports as they can, I suppose, but we'll just fit the GAA. Over here, like I said, it's a big emphasis put on the scholarships to college and all that. So, I mean, we're not at a stage yet where GAA can provide something like that here. So, they have to do what they have to do, I guess. So,
do you find that any of the more traditional American sports translate better towards the GAA games? Like, do you find that if somebody has played American football, that it's an easier transition to Gaelic football, or if they played lacrosse, it's easy for them to step into hurling?
Yeah, all this, but even probably works both ways. I mean, kids playing hurling and Gaelic football, they kind of lend each other, you know, as in just from, I suppose, positioning on the field and all that kind of stuff. But like I've seen there, the one thing with regard to baseball, for example, sure, you've got your hand-eye coordination, all that kind of stuff, we'll say, you know, but basically, I see when I'm coaching the kids here, especially the younger kids, when they're starting out, I can tell if nearly a lot of the time if they play baseball, because when they're swinging, they're taking they're taking one hand off the hurley, which I think you do in baseball, that when you swing, you let go like that, whereas in hurling, we try to encourage them to keep the two hands on, so, and even they're gripped in as well of the hurley. You know, they're used to gripping from a baseball, from the bat, or gripping the bat, basically. So you can see just there's certain differences with some kids, you know, of how they possibly should be holding the hurley. And then for other kids, it comes natural to them because it's the same way they hold a baseball bat. Lacrosse, we've had a couple of lacrosse players that have gone on to play, for example, Camogie. One girl last year hadn't played Camogie before, and she took it up, and she was very good. She took it straight away because she'd been playing lacrosse all the way up. But even things like basketball, you know, for Gaelic football, I mean, a lot of the Gaelic football clubs, or sorry, county teams in Ireland now have brought in basketball coaches with them because of, you know, different like presses and just even the, you know, the use of the ball basically and the quick hands and all that. So like a lot of the sports are kind of, you know, can translate across to each other definitely.
So when I talked about being a member of a smaller club down here, a lot of the focus was on sort of the preservation of the culture and being around people who, you know, it was probably about a 50-50 mix of people from Ireland and people from the United States with an Irish background. We had some people on the club who had no Irish background, right? Yeah. But it was a lot more about preserving the culture. Now, I know your focus is on the games and teaching the sport and, you know, making sure that, you know, people know how to play, but how much of a focus do you still find is on preserving the culture and discussing things like that?
Well, there is, even when you're asking the question there, I'm even thinking like, we have a course recently, a coaching course, but one of the things we touched on was, so that New York team I was telling you about that went home to play in the colleges competition, like they would have sat down at the start of their training season, would say. And a couple of the questions they asked was, what do they want to get out of it? Why are they doing this? And it actually, a lot of the answers came back to that, because keeping our Irish heritage alive, you know, we want to represent New York, but also let people know that, yeah, we have, you know, a proud, I suppose, tradition of GAA here, and we're proud of our culture basically. So that's why a lot of the clubs are doing it here, and a lot of people are involved here. You're probably so involved in the GAA back in Ireland that when you move away, you know, you want to stay involved in something. It's a great way of, from a social point of view, meeting people, you know, or, you know, like just staying active and getting out in the evenings, whether it's coaching or, you know, just watching the games or whatever it is. But basically, it has the amount of people like that I have met straight away after moving over. Like, I mean, it helps you settle in so well, because I mean, you've something in common straight away, I suppose. It's great to say, all right, you're Irish, whatever. But I mean, when you go to the GAA, I mean, everyone has their own story about where their club is and how proud of their club they are. You know, their county. You know, I mean, the amount of lads I've met here and saying, you know, we spoke about like club games, times I played, my club has played their club at home and challenge games, or you know, and you probably played against each other. Like even there on Sunday in Gaelic Park, I met a guy from County Cork, and we played against each other in 2001 in a schools final, and we were actually, you know, it was our first time meeting each other, but we just got chatting, and he told me where he was from, and I said, oh yeah, we played that school and in a Munster final, and he said, oh, I was playing midfield, I was captain of our team, and I was playing full back for our team. So like, that's what, 23 years ago, and you know, you're after meeting a guy randomly, bumping into him, and it turns out you played against each other. So it's great when you meet people like that and they're able to share stories like that. But no, I think people over here are very proud of their culture and proud of their background. I think that's the big reason they push on with the GAA here then as well.
We'll hear more from Eamon Fitzgerald in a future episode of the Irish Baseball Podcast, and the full video of my interview with him can be found on the Community Network website for dues-paying members of the Irish American Baseball Society. That's also where you can go to see my interview with Los Angeles Dodgers senior advisor to MLB and player development, Chris Woodward. I'm Rick Becker, and I'll be back in 2 weeks to continue my conversation with Stephen Jenkins of the Bob Dylan Center. He'll talk about the exhibit the Bob Dylan Center is showing on the Pogues and Shane McGowan. He'll also have a fun baseball story or two about Bob Dylan himself. Here's a sample of my talk with Stephen Jenkins.
I mentioned that Dylan came through Tulsa, but did not visit the center. This was 3 weeks before the center opened. So this would have been April of 2022. And we were scrambling to get the doors open, you know, 3 weeks from that date, which we managed to do, but it was a bit of a, you know, a crazy, thrilling undertaking. So we were in the midst of so much, but we were ready for Dylan should he have wanted to get a sneak peek. Well, we didn't hear from him while he was here, but we do know that he had to pass by the building because two short blocks away is our minor league baseball team's stadium. Go Tulsa Drillers. And Dylan did attend opening night of the Drillers season. We know that he's a fan of minor league baseball.
That show will air on May 6th of 2024. Thanks for listening. I'm Rick Becker, and this has been episode 86 of the Irish Baseball Podcast.